Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the Hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. Health-quest.org for locations. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Medical Monday. I'm in for Alan this afternoon. Dr. Terrence Clark is with us. Dr. Clark is the chief of bariatric care at Ellis Medicine. As one of three surgeons at Ellis Medicine's nationally recognized bariatric care center, Dr. Clark works with patients on surgical weight loss programs to help them effectively lose weight and keep it off. Dr. Clark earned his medical degree from Ross University School of Medicine, Portsmouth, Dominica, and completed his internship and residency at Robert Packer Hospital, Sayre, Pennsylvania, and his fellowship at New York Hospital of Queens, Flushing, New York. He is board certified by the American Board of Surgery. Ellis Bariatric Care Center performs Roux-en-Y gastric bypass surgery, laparoscopic gastric banding, and laparoscopic sleeve gastrectomy. And we'll find out what the heck all that means in a moment. Dr. Clark, thanks for being here today.
No, thank you for having me.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also check in via Facebook. It's facebook.com/WAMC radio, or you can go to our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can connect with us there. You can also tweet us at WAMCVoxPop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But we love your calls here. It is a call-in program, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. So, Dr. Clark, a lot of big words there. Let's start with Roux-en-Y gastric bypass surgery. Is that the one that has been around for several decades now?
Yes, it's been around in various forms since the late 60s.
And Al Hurt, as I recall, the trumpet player, New Orleans trumpet player, big man, had that very early on. I remember reading the news about that one.
Yeah, that's the one that various celebrities you've probably heard of throughout the last 20 years. But that's the one with the longest track record. Right now, all these procedures are available, minimally invasive, so that makes them a lot more appealing to patients.
So what is, in fact, a gastric bypass surgery?
Gastric bypass is typically it's creating a very small pouch out of the existing stomach and converting it to a bypass is bringing up a length of intestine several feet long, usually about 5 or 6 feet, and then using that to detour the very beginning portion of the intestine.
And where does the detour go? This isn't one of those Chris Christie things,
no.
Right?
No, he had the band.
Oh, actually, he did?
He had a gastric band, which is using a device to simulate a pouch of on the upper part of the stomach.
So when you detour, what in effect are you doing that causes you to lose the weight?
The one thought was, traditionally it used to be thought that it was malabsorption was the key to losing the weight rapidly, on top of their having restriction of how large a serving size can be. But the actual detour affects metabolism by affecting the intestinal hormones.
I see. So you could theoretically then, if you don't watch the portion size after you have a bypass, then in fact you could be in for some trouble?
Probably more so that it's more going back to old habits or never changing the habits that led us to this point in the first place. The surgeries are meant as an adjunct to essentially addressing the lifestyle changes that need to be made to sustain long-term weight loss.
1-800-348-2551 is the number on this Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Chartok with Dr. Terrence Clark of Ellis Medicine, and we're talking about bariatric care and bariatric surgery specifically. If you have a question, 800-348-2551. You know, I've read, and I'm no expert on any of this stuff, but I've read that changing someone's mind and changing their habits and their lifestyle is often enormously difficult, and surgery sometimes has a much better track record.
Yeah, as of now, I mean, these surgical solutions for people who are looking to lose a tremendous amount of weight do have the most success and long-term success keeping it off. But you're right, there's a lot of interesting research going on with the intestinal hormones specifically and how that might feed back on some of those lifestyle choices and why they eat the way they do. But it's easy to judge somebody based on how they look, and then you can know whether they're how compliant they are with their medical problems, whereas you can't tell that with certain other types of disease processes.
True enough. Now, in the case of Governor Christie, he had what you said was gastric banding, and it seems like he perhaps has put on some weight. That clearly is possible.
Oh, it's possible because the band is different in the sense that it's that works purely on a restrictive basis. It doesn't have the same metabolic impact as the sleeve gastrectomy or the bypass. So its success hinges on routine follow-ups and the adjustments of the band in addition to the lifestyle changes right from the get-go. You could see Rex Ryan had the gastric band as well.
Yeah.
You could see the effects that the success he had.
It worked.
Right.
But again, it's a year or two down the road. How about 5 years? What's the track record?
Again, as long as you can cement those lifestyle changes, it should be able to afford you that long-term weight loss.
But if you can afford those lifestyle changes and you can make those changes, do you need the surgery?
No. Well, that's always been a valid question brought up. And when we talk about these surgeries, for the most part, we're talking about extremes of weight. We're not talking about somebody looking to lose, 20, 40 pounds. We're talking a lot larger numbers. And the problem with that is sustaining, getting that started in those habits, just by having something that's going to get you a tremendous head start on it, and then working from that point, that seems to lead to a lot more success.
But it seems to me that if it's not a cheap way out, certainly, but if it's a shortcut, what is the incentive for Mr. X, who is 75 pounds overweight? What is his incentive for changing his lifestyle if, snip, 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 suddenly Mr. X has lost a lot of weight?
No, these are questions we get a lot. But the reality is that to understand that these surgeries are not cures.
Yeah.
They're simply the most effective tools available. But to think that they're going to create a miracle result without having to actually try to correct some of the things that are incorrect, you're going to look at long term. You're going to see some weight regain.
Do you need to counsel your patients prior to surgery and say, hey, look, this is not a miracle? You might think it's a miracle, but it's up to you in the long run?
Oh, absolutely. We drive that point home multiple times, not to mention everyone sees a psychologist before any of these surgeries.
Well, now why?
Really, I always tell patients, it's not because I think they're crazy.
But some of them clearly might be.
Well, they have an unhealthy relationship, or they're using food for other forms, whether it's stress. This is their way they respond to stress. They're eating as opposed to smoking or alcohol. You pick your poison. But they have clearly an unhealthy relationship with food, and I think they need to get to the bottom of that. And I think a psychologist is far more skilled at accomplishing than a surgeon or their primary physician.
So this really the surgical aspect of bariatric care, as you said, began in the 60s. I'm sure there was a fair amount of research in the decades prior. So what have we seen as far as the growth of this, and how many people are now going this route?
Actually, as far as the numbers of people getting surgery, it's been pretty stable for the last 7 years, running somewhere between the high 200,000 to 300,000 people a year getting these surgeries.
Wow.
But the reality is we're only operating on probably 1-2% of the people who qualify.
And the qualification then is what?
So the most straightforward one is a body mass index, which is a formula based on height and weight.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much if that's over 40,
okay,
that's considered a candidate.
Okay.
If it's between 35 and 40 and they have associated medical problems such as high blood pressure, diabetes, sleep apnea, these things will also make them a candidate.
Mm. Very interesting indeed. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Let's grab a call before the first break. And Marianne and Niskayuna. Marianne, you're on.
Hi. My question is this. What is the survivability rate for some of the gastric surgeries?
The rates are very good. Complication rates are extremely low. Pretty much since this multidisciplinary approach and a lot more thorough training in the last 20 years. Essentially, numbers for gastric bypass and sleeve are less than half of a percent for mortality rate, which is lower than pretty much you go across the board, colon surgery, heart surgery. So those are tremendous numbers, not to mention, and then the complication rates themselves are also significantly low.
Yeah, my problem is that I've had a couple of friends that have had various surgeries. I think Rue and Y in one case, and she ended up a lot bigger than she was before surgery, and she has subsequent digestive problems and she wishes she hadn't done it.
Yeah, that's a pretty rare instance, but I think there's a good lesson there, is that how could someone gain more weight? It depends, of course, how far out from surgery she is. But the main impact, the metabolic impact of these surgeries, is highest during those first couple of years. But if a person doesn't really change their habits, they might not be able to eat as large a serving size, but they could still be eating all the wrong foods, and they can still be not really increasing physical activity. And to think that weight loss is going to mysteriously just stay in check without making those changes is really an unreasonable expectation.
Mm.
But that's been the experience when we see anybody who's gained a significant amount of weight after a bypass or a sleeve.
Okay. Thank you.
Marianne, thanks a lot for the call. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Terrence Clark is our guest. Dr. Clark is the chief of bariatric care at Ellis Medicine, and we'll get back to your calls in a moment.
Support comes from Nathan Litauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, announcing Dr. Ja'an Shen performing minimally invasive robotic spine surgery at Nathan Litauer Hospital, NLH.org. Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering workshops for adults and teens taught by master craftspeople on a 50-acre farm. Snowfarm.org. And Adirondack Folk School, Lake Luzerne, New York, dedicated to teaching the arts, crafts, and culture of the Adirondack region. AdirondackFolkSchool.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Shartok. Dr. Terrence Clark is here. We're talking about bariatric care and bariatric surgery. We'd love to hear from you. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Faith in Troy. Faith, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, I had a vertical sleeve gastrectomy about 2.5 years ago, and I've gotten off track. So I've heard a lot about the pouch test. And I was curious what the doctor thought about pouch testing.
What's a pouch test?
Are you referring to just checking to see if it's stretched or dilated over the
there
since
is,
it was made?
There's a lot of like websites and groups that I'm participating in that do like a 5-day pouch test where they do liquids, then soft foods, and they kind of slowly. My thought was that it reset the pouch to a smaller size.
No, there hasn't been anything that proves that happens. When we talk about changing the serving sizes after these surgeries, the sleeve, the gastric bypass, if you go back to a point where you're trying to maximize how much you can get at a serving, at some point things could potentially get stretched, and that's
right.
You know, time and pressure beats all. And if it has been stretched, I mean, there are things that can be done potentially to either make it smaller, but essentially changing your diet for a temporary period of time that won't do it on its own.
Okay.
But the best way is, I think, getting back to the dietitian and seeing what is it that you're doing differently with the dietary things, or maybe things weren't as changed as much as you hoped they had been from the beginning.
Right. Oh, no, I know what I'm doing wrong.
Okay.
Faith, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. It's Medical Monday on Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Karen in Albany. Karen, you're on.
Oh, hi. I actually had a gastric sleeve performed in June, and I've been really pleased with the results, I should say. But I did have a question about gas, pain, and pressure. It almost feels as though I feel more pressure where my stomach was rather than in my stomach itself, if that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. It's not quite phantom pain. It can be that depending on what you're eating or if you swallow a lot of air when you do eat or don't, you've probably heard this before and you're probably following it, not using a straw, not speaking while you're eating. But, you know, any of those things, drinking too fast or, you know, any of those things that increase the amount of swallowing of air can sometimes give you that sensation, because that is air that's probably trapped in the sleeve, and just you can't really burp it in the same way that you would have with before you had the surgery. So I think slowing down minimizes that, how fast you're eating. Also, some of the foods that, you know, anything carbonated obviously would be would increase the chance of that happening. But those are some of the things that you might be able to do to decrease the chances of that happening.
And once you sort of have that episode, is there anything you can do to kind of alleviate the pain?
You know, a lot of time, obviously, that air will pass through eventually. If you can bring any up, that's great. But being upright, walking around is really going to be your best friend when you do experience it. Sometimes you can use simethicone. That might work. It's not as reliable.
Okay, thank you.
Karen, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Dr. Terrence Clark is our guest. So the numbers, you said, are pretty steady as far as the people who opt for bariatric surgery. What would you say is the sort of relapse rate 3 or 4 years down the road where people are suddenly overweight again?
Yeah, what we call weight recidivism, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 15% to 20%. So,
which ain't bad.
But it's not an insignificant number. Obviously, we'd love them to be lower.
Yeah.
A lot of that you can almost say leads into people that maybe don't follow up as frequently as they should be. Generally, we like our patients to be following up with their bariatric surgeon once a year, going longer, further out.
Mm-hmm.
But that tends to be the recidivism rates.
Can you undo? In other words, if you had to, can you undo the sleeve?
The sleeve can't be reversed. It can be converted to another configuration, such as a bypass, or depending on what the issue was. If it was, depending on what the reason, most times we don't have to reverse anything unless there's some severe nutritional problems, which it's pretty rare. But for doing it for weight loss, to encourage more weight loss, it would be converting it to a different procedure.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Steve and Lee, you're on. Steve.
Yes, hi. My question is this. I'm curious as to how people get their surgeries funded. Do people pay for it out of pocket? Do they have insurance? Does the state pay for it in some cases?
No, these are covered by most insurance companies. These are considered medical necessity. They're not, I think, at some point there used to be the conception that these were cosmetic on some level, but the reality is that they are, in fact, for medical necessity. The most insurances will cover it. Medicare and Medicaid cover it as well. So very few times is it an out-of-pocket experience.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot, Steve.
Appreciate it.
Now, I would assume that there are some cases that are, in fact, cosmetic. In other words, an actor or somebody like that or a politician, let's say.
Yeah, there might be a secondary gain, obviously, for losing weight if you're in public office or in the limelight. But it's most of these are still even with that underlying tone, the main thrust is medical, improving medical problems. I always tell the three main things for people, what our goals are. One is improving their medical problems. Two is preventing new ones. And the third one is improving their quality of life.
And I assume that if you were to quickly drop weight like that, then it's much easier to be active, much easier to get out there and get the exercise, and then it helps the cycle.
Well, think about the cycle the other way. For people who gain weight, let's say they have an injury, they're severe arthritis, the cycle they start gaining weight very rapidly.
Yeah, and then they can't get off that couch.
Right, so it's that we're working that in reverse.
Let's go to Heidi in Housatonic. Heidi, you're on with Dr. Terrence Clark.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I guess my question has also to do with the recidivism, not the rate, but how much counseling do you expect and demand, both psychological and nutritional, and for what length of time?
Obviously the work that we have them do before surgery, both with the dietitians and the psychologists. But even after, the dietitian even sees them while they're in the hospital before they go home. And we do get them get patients back to see the dietitian several months after the surgery to pretty much reiterate reiterate what we want to accomplish and what they should be doing going forward. We'd like them to follow fairly frequently. I mean, we don't push psychological evaluations unless there's certain circumstances. A potential obstacle to doing those things, however, is that insurance doesn't always pay to follow up with psychologists or the dietitian. And so a lot of these patients have lower incomes and can't afford a lot of these visits.
But if you expect them to be successful over the long haul, I would think that, you know, they need to make certain sacrifices for the gains of a weight loss that they can hold over time.
No, absolutely, and I think it's. I think once you can start getting these changes, and I wouldn't even look at them as sacrifices. I mean, they have to relearn how to eat.
Right.
And I always tell them, just assume everything you know about eating is wrong, and we're starting over. And you're right. It's but that's why we have, aside from these dietitians and psychologists, we have support groups, not to mention just getting a life coach in our office, all these things that we can provide to them without really – putting more of a financial burden on them.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Heidi, thank you very much. It's Vox Pop Medical Monday on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Alan Shartok. Dr. Terrence Clark is our guest. Dr. Clark is chief of bariatric care at Ellis Medicine. And we'll go back to the phones. Carly in Albany. Carly.
Hi. My question is for a woman who has not had children yet and would like to, are these surgeries recommended to, you shouldn't have that before you, start a family, or is it okay to do that and then later have children?
No, you're absolutely safe to have these procedures and then have children later on. I typically would tell people not to have to get pregnant within a year and a half to 2 years after their procedure or when their weight starts to plateau more, only because we'd hate for people to be trying to support a growing child and then to be losing a substantial weight at the same time. There's been some studies actually from the obstetricians showing that women that have children at a lower weight tend to have healthier children than they did at a higher weight. So that's pretty good evidence as far as how much you'd be safer to even have the children later on. The other thing I tell people, especially with the sleeve gastrectomy and the gastric bypass, women who have had difficulty getting pregnant in the past will have much higher fertility rates during that point of rapid weight loss.
Wow. Now, why is that?
It's felt, again, aside from these rapid changes of the gastrointestinal hormones, the reproductive hormones for females can be just as unpredictable.
Ah.
And so even oral birth control doesn't have the same effect during that period of time. So we do recommend people using barrier methods during the time of most rapid weight loss. I try to tell them abstinence, but no one goes for
No,
that.
That's not really popular anymore. Carly, thanks a lot for the call.
All right, thank you.
1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. What about tweens or kids or teenagers? In other words, there's an epidemic in this country of fat kids. And so what if you have one who is 12 years old who is 75 pounds overweight? Is surgery not an option at that age?
It is actually an option, but it is not as readily available. And I think a lot of places are still skeptical to offer it. And parents...
Now, why would they be skeptical?
Because I think you need a lot when you start dealing with adolescents and younger. I think you need a lot more things in place at a program, such as specialists and pediatric specialists, and that's not as those services aren't available at all hospitals. Not to mention, I think you really want to know that you've exhausted all your measures, your traditional weight loss measures when you're dealing with kids. But the reports are good for children, especially adolescents having gastric bypass, sleeve gastrectomies.
So growth and continued growth is not a concern when you do something like this?
No, there's been nothing to show as far as stunted growth or bone density or things like that. There hasn't been really anything that says that they're not going to achieve their full potential later on. Now, in other countries, they've done some of these surgeries on even children in borderline infancy.
Really?
There was one a few months ago where they operated on a child, I believe in Saudi Arabia, who was 2 years old, and they did a sleeve gastrectomy.
Why?
I mean, the kid was morbidly obese. I don't know the details of their medical problems, but that does seem a little aggressive. But again, I wasn't involved in that care, but that's not things that are being done in this country.
So you mentioned malabsorption. So I assume that part of what this does is it limits the absorption of whatever the food contains into the system. So when there's a kid, you need to absorb more, right?
Right, but those old adages of the malabsorption are probably not as much of a player as they were once thought to be. And it's likely that the metabolic impact, the effect of the intestinal hormones, is probably more has more of an impact and effect on the system than the malabsorption does. Mm.
Dr. Terrence Clark is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Jeff in Utica. Jeff, you're on.
Hi. I heard an earlier question regarding who pays for these surgeries, and I actually wanted to ask sort of a follow-up to that about any studies of subsequent cost savings in terms of medical care for people who experience substantial weight loss.
All right, we really don't want to go as far as like the costs of the services on this radio station, but go ahead.
But I can address the what you're talking about as far as cost. What length of time away from the surgeries does the cost of performing these things actually do they cover themselves? And there's been some studies, and they vary, but anywhere from about 24 to 36 months after the surgery, there's felt to be a break even as far as the cost of medications that the people are no longer spending money on, or time out of work, or any of those various other medical issues that was costing money that now is
right,
being saved.
That was my suspicion. I sort of got the impression that people were concerned about public dollars funding this, and it seems to me that the medical benefits should make it better than cost neutral, so actually cost savings over the long haul, even if it is performed with public dollars.
That's what initiated the work on those studies. It's an interesting thing that it just goes to show on some level of discrimination against obese people is that you would question how much it would cost to get them to lose weight when we never question performing a extreme cancer surgery on advanced cancer or a lot of advanced complex surgeries on a lot of elderly patients. And we don't question that as frequently where there'll never be cost savings on those kind of procedures.
Mm. True, true. Right. The issues with obesity and income, I believe, have also been studied, and people have found that low income actually tends to drive obesity problems because of lack of available healthy stores, for example, in a lot of the neighborhoods.
No, you're right. There does tend to be a prevalence among lower socioeconomic groups, and you're right, whether that's education-based or just available resources or the fact that poor food choices are cheaper and more readily available.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff, great call. Thanks a lot, and we appreciate you checking in from Utica. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It is Vox Pop. It is Medical Monday. Ray Graff in for Alan Chartok. Let's go to Steve in Vermont. Steve, where are you in Vermont?
I live pretty close toward Killington's area.
All right. Well, you're on the air. Thanks a lot for calling.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. I just wanted to mention them. My daughter, she ended up having a brain tumor, hypothalamic brain tumor. She had surgery on it, and thank goodness the surgery was successful. She had a few surgeries for it, but it was successful. But one of the issues caused by the tumor was a hypothalamic brain tumor. It caused obesity, severe obesity for my daughter. She ended up having, just from the brain tumor damage, she ended up weighing close to 500 pounds. She had gastric bypass surgery a year ago, and she's lost about 200 pounds now.
Wow.
So, the surgery was very successful. She still has some obesity, but she's just much more independent, much more energetic. The surgery is wonderful for her.
That's good to hear.
So, really why I called, but I just wanted to mention.
Steve, thanks a lot, and keep up that great progress. We appreciate it very much. 1-800-348-2551. It's either Harry or Mary or Larry in Nanuet. Who's calling?
Harry from Nanuet.
Oh,
Doctor,
hello, Harry.
Thank you for taking my call. What is the highest age range of people that have this procedure or surgery? And also off of a previous question, and what is the recidivism of the age range?
As of now, we don't have an upper limit. We kind of just take it individually. We've operated on people into their upper 70s for all the procedures. As far as recidivism goes, I tend to sway people away from going with a gastric band only because it's a far more gradual approach. Not to mention I'm up against decades of eating habits, so I always try to push them towards the bypass or the sleeve just because they'll be a much more rapid response. And those are patients that generally needed to lose the weight yesterday as opposed to, the average age of people getting these procedures tends to be in the upper 30s, early 40s.
And those who hold, to where there isn't the recidivism, are there numbers on that? Those that do not have the recidivism, are their numbers compared to the ones that do in the procedure?
That generally we're talking about 75 to 80% of people keeping the majority of their weight off.
Okay. Harry, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
1-800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Terrence Clark is our guest, and we hit the home stretch as we talk bariatric care on Vox Pop.
Support comes from Premier Medical Group. Gastroenterology, urology, internal medicine, endocrinology, geriatrics, nephrology, and pulmonology with offices throughout the Hudson Valley. PremierMedicalHV.com. Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center's Graduate Social Work Program and Graduate and Undergraduate Nursing Programs, hosting an open house Thursday, February 27th, 6 p.m. St. Francis Hospital Medical Arts Pavilion, adelphi.edu. And Marriott Town Place Suites Albany Downtown, offering studio, one- and two-bedroom suites with fully equipped kitchens. Amenities include indoor pool, breakfast, local transportation, Wi-Fi, and parking. TPSAlbany.com for reservations.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Medical Monday, Ray Graff in for Alan Chartok. It's 2:41. We hit the home stretch here, and if you want to get a call in, good time to do it is right now, 800-348-2551. One of the great dangers of the internet, Dr. Clark, is it makes us all think we know a lot of stuff. So before you came on, I looked it up on Wikipedia, and it said, basically the older you are, the less likely you will have any success with this or something to that effect. So is there a cutoff where you just say, well, do what you can. Eat a couple of grapefruit. Do something else.
No, not unless we're talking about really advanced age. We're talking about where the risks start to outweigh the benefits of doing any procedure. Someone with severe heart disease or pulmonary issues that are also over 80. It starts to mount up that the risks of doing a procedure are going to end up with anything positive, and even if we do, will they be ambulatory enough to really change any lifestyle?
Mm-hmm.
But we do, a lot of the patients we do, even older patients that you would think that, well, maybe we can't do that. A lot of their orthopedic surgeons are no longer doing their joints replacements until they actually lose weight.
Ah.
Because they're less chance of infections, better results, longer, more longevity related to the joints.
And certainly less pain.
Yes.
So 1-800-348-2551. Estelle in Clifton Park, you're on with Dr. Clark.
Hello. Hi. I'm just wondering, for these patients following surgery, besides going to the doctor and seeing a nutritionist, are there support groups that they can go to on a long-term basis?
Oh, yes. We have several support groups every month, as well as online support groups. We even set up a support group through our Facebook for patients who live at a distance. We've taken support groups even on the road because we have a lot of patients from coming from far away. So we try to have as much resources out there for patients as possible.
My other question would be, what about groups for the general public that, you know, somebody that's got to lose 25 or 50 pounds rather than, you know, a tremendous amount of weight? Are there groups like that available to the public beside Weight Watchers?
There are. We are trying to work on, and not just us, but other weight loss centers try to work on medical management of weight loss. And, you know, for someone who has to lose 25 pounds, which we consider the lucky people, I mean, they're really geared towards losing weight more traditional ways, changing their diet, because they just need a few changes here and there to get the results they're looking for, and obviously not a major surgery.
Yeah, I understand that, but I mean there are a limited, as far as I'm concerned, there really are practically no choices. I mean, Weight Watchers is about all I can think of in the area.
Okay.
There are, I mean, we do have outpatient counseling, nutritional counseling available too, through Ellis, but there are support services like that. But you're right, they're not as readily advertised as Weight Watchers or Jenny Craig or any of those other systems.
So you do have support groups at Ellis?
Those are more one-on-one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Estelle, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Mike in Western Massachusetts. Mike, you're on.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, my question was about 8 years ago, I had the lap band surgery, and I was like 280 pounds. I got down to probably like 250, and that's where I kind of stayed. And then I started getting back up, whatever, but I was really getting sick of, you know, choking all the time, so I had it loosened up, and it's supposedly loosened up all the way. But anyway, my question is, quite a bit often I'll choke again, you know, like, it just hits you, you know? You don't know when it's going to happen. It just happens.
What do you mean choke? Explain.
It gets stuck, just like when you first had the lap band surgery. You know, you can only eat a little bit of golf ball size, you know what I mean? But it'll start...
Sometimes with the gastric band, it created a smaller pouch than the sleeve or the bypass have. But again, obviously, even though you're supposed to chew everything up exceedingly well, take your time and have a smaller serving size, obviously the slip on any of those things could lead to it having to regurgitate that food up. The other thing that I always see sometimes that band patients do are go back to some habits where they eat, maybe just eat a little too much, but then they lay down flat, or they do this right before going to bed, and that also increases the chances of that happening. And then there's some situations where the band just doesn't work for patients because of this issue. Either they can't adapt to the restriction that the band is providing. There are some people that need to have the band removed and potentially converted to one of the other procedures.
You know, I know two good friends of mine who were both, like, real big guys. I'm talking, like, you know, you look at them, like, you're, like, 400-and-something pounds. And within a matter of a couple of years, they were down to, you know, 220 pounds.
Wow.
Like, holy cow. I mean, you know, they did really good. But then they gained some weight back again. But, I mean, you know, I'm probably back up around 270 right now. But I'm getting older, though. You know, I'm almost 52, so I got to figure something. But, you know, I heard somebody else talking about the support groups. They're all in that, you know, I had to go, you know, talk to, like, a nutritionist and maybe talk to somebody else or whatever it was. And then, you know, it's after you get the surgery, you'll be, you know, going to all these meetings and stuff. And nobody ever called me back. I never went to one meeting ever, you know, support group meetings or anything like that.
Well, I mean,
I was on my own after it happened, you know, after I did it.
They're recommended, but we can't force people to go. We try to get them to go to at least a couple just so they know how they work. But generally, they're run at a certain time every month, and it's just a matter of getting to them if you really want to.
Okay, let's go to Liz in Albany. Hi, Liz, you're on Vox Pop Medical Monday.
Hi, I heard that
people that have had some form of this gastric surgery turn to alcohol and become alcoholics. Huh. Is that true?
There have been some studies showing increased substance abuse after bariatric surgery. That is not to say that, you know, for people, they're just going to become either alcohol dependent or another drug. It's really related to people that have been using food to manage their stress, and how will they manage their stress when they can't use the food as an outlet anymore? And so the reality is, you know, they're not looked at it this way, but they're already kind of an addict. It's just that they've been using food. And that's so when that disappears, guess, you know, people are still going to have stress. And there's various ways and healthier ways of managing it. But for some people, they, you know, that those could be people that might turn to alcohol.
I hadn't heard that before, and I wanted to check it out with you.
We've had a few people that turned to becoming shopaholics, and not like in a jokey way. I mean, running the credit cards to max and potentially ruining their marriage because of it, because that's what they were using to manage their stress. So there's all different forms.
Do you do psychological counseling prior to surgery and say, listen, we got a red flag here. Here's an addictive personality.
Absolutely. We've had, or you know, depending on what the issues are, we've had it where we've forced, you know, we're not going to operate on you for about a year, and you know, go through regular counseling and then get reevaluated and see if they feel like you're a better candidate at this point.
Liz, great call. Thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551. Judy in Amsterdam. Hello, Judy.
Hello, hello.
You're on.
Hi. Dr. Clark did my surgery about 5 years ago.
Oh, hooray.
And I was 52 at the time, so I'm now 57. My problem was I actually got too thin. Everybody was telling me you're too thin. So I went from a size 26 to a very small 4, which was great. So then I started to gain a little weight, and now I'm a size 8, which is, I'm finding, is too big for me. So I need to be a size 6 to be healthy. And it's just strange to me that after being a size 26, that I'm aware that those extra few pounds between a size 6 and a size 8 are too much.
I think that's, everyone has a different sense of self-image. But I think for a lot of people, once they feel that lower weight and anything that starts to go above, I think they're on high alert, and because they don't want it to spiral out of control.
So what are you going to do, Judy?
Well, I've rejoined the gym. What had happened was I was going to Curves, and that was very good. I did very well. I was, you know, looking good. I was getting to all the support groups down there at the hospital, and that was great. But the problem is I work in the evenings that they are, and I know I have to go back to journaling, and I know I have to do things that are, you know, back to the basics. And I felt great. I'm very grateful for the surgery. I've been able to do a lot of things. Like I said, when I got down to size 4, probably with my age, the skin isn't as elastic as it should be. And it just looked drawn. You know, I was beginning to look very, very thin and unhealthy. So, no, I don't want to go back up to those larger sizes, and I'm looking forward to some warmer weather so I can get outside and not have the cold bother my breathing as much, and get back on track. But I'm really grateful to the group there with Dr. Clark, because I was on two blood pressure pills. It's, you know, very strong stuff. I was taking arthritis medicine. I was on a CPAP machine, and my last blood work before surgery was pre-diabetic.
Oh, boy.
All those issues have been resolved.
Well, a satisfied customer.
You've done great.
Fantastic.
Come and visit us again, though.
All right.
Once a year, at least.
That's a good plan. 1-800-348-2551. Claudia, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Leverett.
Oh, Leverett. Hi. Nice to have you on.
Hi. You know, a lot of people have talked about the addiction issue or the overeating food as a possibility of addiction. I want to point out that there's a couple of great groups. There's Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous and Overeaters Anonymous, both of which use the 12-step model. obviously this has to be something that you come to yourself and that you decide you want to address. But I, from what I've heard, they work really well. So.
Okay.
Well, thanks for letting us know that. I aside from sending people to psychologists or just like counseling within the office, I'd be happy to use any of those resources available to us.
Yeah. Actually, Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous has some particular specific information for healthcare providers. Essentially, what they say, they've got a couple of guidelines about things to eliminate, but then you weigh and measure your food and you, you know, accept the 12-step model, the same as Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right.
And I think they work quite well, so I highly recommend them.
Claudia, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Terrence Clark is our guest. And let's go over to Ron in Colony. Ron, you're on.
Yes, hi, guys.
Hi.
First, I want to make a comment that I don't. What I'm talking about isn't someone who's 500 pounds.
Okay.
They belong in a hospital, okay,
right,
until they really get control of the whole issue with whatever you can do for them. But as far as almost everybody else that does this, there's a problem because most people do not know how to eat. Now, Alan, last time I called in on the show, Alan goes, what's your medical credentials? He kind of got upset with
me. All right, well, let's...
I don't have any medical credentials, except that I've been studying this for well over 20 years.
I see. Well, and let's see what the doc says.
No, well, hold on. I just want to say, it's really easy. It really isn't that hard. You don't even tell people what not to eat. You tell them what to eat. And then eventually, they'll have so much good food in them.
Hmm.
They'll have to take a walk every morning, do a smoothie every morning.
I see.
And then they're going to have to start eating live food. Fresh fruits, live food. Fresh fruits and vegetables.
I got you. All right. Well, Ron, thank you.
A lot of it raw.
I see.
Okay?
Well, hey, Ron, I appreciate the call, but we only got two minutes left, buddy, but I appreciate it. Doc, you want to weigh in on that?
No, I don't think he's completely, he's not off on what he says. There definitely does need to be a change in how we eat in this country.
Yeah.
But right now, between costs, people's what's available, and people's pretty much time availability to exercise, these are the biggest obstacles.
Right. Okay, well, let's take another couple of calls here in the last remaining moment or two or three. Christina in Ghent, you're on. Hello?
Hi, this is Christina. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to expound on what Claudia was saying also, that this Food Addict and Recovery Anonymous, also Overeaters Anonymous, Food Addicts Anonymous, all of these organizations have websites and they have phone calls, teleconferences. They're all free. The whole program is free and it's just a tremendous support. I know also from personal experience how incredibly effective they've been. So food addiction is a big problem, and people don't come to be those kinds of weights without having that kind of issue.
Okay.
Well, there's different ways people get there, but this is one of the big ones. But I think these are good resources for people who have gained a lot of weight, or even for people who have had the surgeries. I think they're valuable to both groups.
Yes. So thank you. I just wanted to reiterate that, but also give that more information that there are teleconferences. Go on the internet and find these organizations, and there's tremendous support.
Terrific. Christina, thank you very much. And a minute or so here to go. Let's go to our old friend Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're on. Hello, Jim. Try it again. Jim, are you there? Oh, no, that's Shelby. Hi, Shelby. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome.
How are you today?
Good. You have about 30 seconds.
Well, I'd like to just add on top of all the other great encouragement that there are alternate ways to helping people stay motivated to lose weight, to keep the weight off, with lap band or without lap band. And one of those is Team Beachbody. It's a website, online organization that features exercise programs that can be done at home with DVDs, as well as Shakeology, which is a meal replacement shake.
All right. Well,
that is very great stuff.
I appreciate it very much. Beachbody, that was an Annette Funicello film, was it not?
Beach Blanket Bingo?
Yeah, that's the one. Dr. Clark, it's amazing you haven't had to answer a question in the last 25 minutes, but it's been nice having you here. Dr. Terrence Clark, Chief of Bariatric Care at Ellis Medicine, and we hope to have you back on Medical Monday. We are just about out of time. I want to thank everybody who called in today. I apologize if you were left on the line. And, well, let's see. Support here comes from Topperson, natural creams designed to address the epidemic of addiction to pain medicine by providing pain relief for the 21st century. Topperson.com. Thanks again for joining us today, Alan. We'll be back in the saddle for our next Medical Monday. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Stay tuned now for a news update.